Okay, listeners, you're very welcome back to episode 4 with Timmy Dalton, okay? So we're out here in Timmy's office, out in the home house. He's invited us out here to have a wee chat with him, okay, about his sporting career, okay? And hopefully we're going to get a few nuggets of information off him today. So I suppose, where did this all start, getting Timmy on board? So a couple of weeks ago, I texted Timmy and I was like, Timmy, I'd love to do an episode on, you know, proteges within the club, you know, star players and stuff like that. And Timmy kind of knew exactly where he wanted to go and kind of said back to me, look, that's fine, Fergal, but I'd like to really talk about the transition from juvenile, you know, club to senior club and kind of the drop-off rates that kind of can occur as well in clubs. Because obviously, you know, in the GA, there is a massive drop-off rate. We all play a bit of GA and most of us have played a little bit, but there is a huge drop-off rate. But look, in terms of Timmy, I'm just going to talk about Timmy in terms of the character he is. So I have a wee small, I suppose, story and to describe Timmy as a person. So I've kind of touched on a few times. Last year, I came back playing football for the first time in 10 years. And Timmy, nice guy, really good to me, you know, when I came over, very welcoming. But I'll never forget the last game I played before I went back to Edinburgh, and we were playing Airog actually out in Banshee. And I think we had a draw on the day, and we were very disappointed with the draw. It meant we weren't really going to go any further. We could have been in a relegation battle after this was senior football. And Timmy just turned around to me after the game, after going through all that, and turned around and said, sorry, Fergal, I should have given you a few minutes. But I just thought it was really, really nice just to kind of give me a nod and kind of to show, saying that, you know, to give note to the fact that I put a bit of effort in and that, you know, I was deserving of a few minutes. And he kind of said, look, but I just wanted to keep you for the junior. And I was very happy with that response. But that gave me a lot of encouragement that, you know, Timmy had realised that I'd come back, I'd put a bit of an effort in, and, you know, I was worth a few minutes. So that meant a lot to me at the time, Timmy. I don't know if it meant a lot to you, but it did actually mean a lot to me because Timmy's so well respected, you know, over Neville Rovers and stuff like that. But yeah, I suppose, so that's where we are, guys. We're looking at the drop-off rate, okay, between juvenile and senior football, and we're going to talk with Timmy about his experiences as a juvenile player and then some of his experiences as a senior player as well and as a coach as well, I guess. So, Burns, you just wanted to kick it off there.
So I suppose, yeah, Timmy, just in terms of your, well, I suppose, both playing and coaching career, what have you kind of done in the past? Obviously, we know you represented the Rovers, but what else have you done?
So I suppose, starting off, I would have played all sports, interested in all sports. I was out kicking out in the lawn every day. Everything was about sport. Didn't really think about anything else, only sport. Football, hurling, soccer, golf, rugby, everything. I was playing everything and really enjoyed it, you know. So as I went up through the ages, I started getting on, we'll say, Tipperary teams for football, hurling, soccer. And I suppose under 12, 13, 14, 15, I realised I had a bit of potential, you know. So the aim then was to get on Tipperary minor teams, 21 and hopefully senior. So I started, I suppose all along then we were going well with the club. Like we were winning titles with Arv Rovers underage, football and hurling. And I just went on then to play minor hurling and football with Tip. So my first year was I was 16 playing with the minors and got good experience with that. Then went on second year again football and hurling. Again, I think that year I think both teams actually got knocked out pretty early. But then I was going into my last year of minor and really looking forward to that. I was up to the age and could really stand out, maybe, you know. So good year with the Tipperary minors and footballers and hurlers that year. We won in Ireland hurling against Galway 2006, and we lost to the eventual All-Ireland winners Roscommon in the football, you know. And I was playing good football and hurling that year, you know, and even years leading up to it, I was playing good stuff and really really thought I could go somewhere with the sport, you know. So I suppose following year after minor, then first year under 21 again, played well for the footballers. Was on the Tip under 21 team. I think I came on the first game in the under 21s, but they lost the first round. And then when that year finished, again was going to come back next year and all guns blazing, but unfortunately I got injured. So that really put a spanner in the works, you know. And I suppose I never really recovered from that injury. And that's then where kind of my hopes and dreams of being a great player kind of I suppose, disappeared, you know. Mm. So that was
where Timmy, what was the injury?
So I jumped for a ball, landed, and I tore my cruciate, right? Now it was posterior cruciate. So what happened then was I'd never been injured really before. Got the injury, knew it was bad because it was obviously felt bad and I couldn't really walk with it. But I was one of these people that, a couple of weeks I'll be fine, or a month's time I'll be fine, or whatever. And just thought I could come back and be the same person, but I wasn't. And I think I came back, I probably came back too soon, then I came back maybe a month or two after it happened. The club Arbor Rovers were actually playing the Munster Championship football game. It was an important game against the team from Kerry.
I think it was at that game, actually.
It was
on a short race. Yeah, I remember that game,
And I came back for that, and I really shouldn't have, like, and I'd say after about 30 seconds, there was an ambulance taking me out to get. Yeah.
What year was that then? Was that 2006?
That was 2007.
Okay.
Or 2008, maybe, actually. 2008. So it went again. Knee was just weak, and went again. And I never got back, you know. Now, of course, that some of it was my own fault. I suppose when I got injured, then I got unfit. I came back then and thought I could be the same person. I wasn't. I was struggling for fitness. You know, diet wasn't right, lifestyle wasn't right, and was trying hard. I was going to the gym, going running every day, etc. But just wasn't happening for me, and I ended up playing games then where I was overweight and just was constantly depressed about the whole thing because I wasn't doing the things that I knew.
So you're on about other things there, Timmy, like, you know, your weight and your fitness and all the rest of it. Yeah. But does the injury ever play up from time? Do you still get
pain? Oh yeah. So I came back and I knew my knee didn't feel right at all. Yeah. So it felt very loose. It felt as if it could go maybe at any time, you know. Yeah. So it just, I knew in the back of my mind always when I was playing, I said, your knee isn't right, like, you know. So yeah, that was constantly there, like. And then a few years then after that, I suppose from the burden of everything then, my knee and my other leg went. So I tore the cruciate in my other knee.
Oh, gee, yeah.
And then again, trying hard with different stuff and just constant injury after injury.
But what's interesting about that is, you know, back then the knowledge and the education of injuries and maybe physiotherapy and stuff like that probably hadn't filtered down to the club level at that stage.
Yeah.
Probably has more advanced now at this stage.
The cruciate operation is different these days to back then, you know. Back then they took, when they were replacing the cruciate, it was taken out of your hamstring to replace. Now I think they actually take it out of the back of your calf. And I actually found that when I got the cruciate operation, that my hamstring then had problems with my hamstring. The hamstring was pulling the whole time, you know. Eventually, I done very bad damage to my hamstring one day. Just totally just snapped, like, you know. But again, fitness and everything, I was trying to run as fast as I could, and I wasn't as fast as I was before, and I was getting frustrated and everything, you know. So that's just what happened over time, you know.
I think we've kind of got into you as a player and where things went right and where things might have, you know, not gone to plan and stuff. So we'll kind of keep a lot on that track. We'll come back to the managerial questions later on. But a question that we said in the boys were talking about, you know, Burns, you were mentioned that even, you know, you would have heard of, even before you went to the Abbey, you would have heard of...
Yeah, Timmy. We would have heard about Timmy Dalton outside, like, come on.
Yeah.
What he was doing with the club. And obviously, then we went into the Abbey, and I remember when we were in first or second year, he was in transition year, and he was starting on the senior football team, and like that was kind of unheard of at the time, that so-and-so young was playing senior football with the school.
So obviously, Timmy, look, I know, and you didn't want to talk about much of this stuff yourself because you're quite humble, but we just wanted to touch on it, like, because these are important things for players who are kind of, I suppose, you know, star players or whatever you want to call them growing up. Did you always know how good you are, or what was your self-belief like as a young player? And did you ever feel burden or pressure? Because you are a corner forward, so, you know, technically, you know, you're a goal scorer, aren't you? That's your job, to score. So did you feel the pressure, one question, and I suppose added on to that, did you know how good you are, or how did you feel about yourself?
Yeah, I suppose, when I think back, I always had this thing in my head whether it's right or wrong, that I wanted to be the best, you know, and if you were playing on a team, I want to score the most, I want to do this and do that, and I suppose I knew from a young age that I could maybe do things that maybe other people weren't able to do, like I was playing well during matches and scoring big scores and scoring good scores or outside of the boot or left and right or whatever, and hurling playing well as well. And just, I suppose, I did believe myself that I could go on and do great things or whatever, you know. Yeah. And I suppose then when it doesn't happen, then later on, I got very down about it, you know, because I didn't fulfil the potential that I wanted to fulfil, you know. And it just, suddenly then you're gone from being the sports person. Timmy Dalton was always associated with as being a sports person. You're gone from being the sports person to thinking to myself, well, what else am I good at? Or am I good at anything
else?
Their
lack of identity there.
It was all sport with me, and I didn't think about anything else. So suddenly then when I got into my 20s, I was like, geez, Timmy, are you actually good at anything else? You know, I need to find out.
Or who are you even? Because a lot of sports stars say that when they finish, professional sports stars say that, you know, it can lead to mental health issues because you're like, what's your identity outside of sport?
Yeah. Because I remember back in the time, say when I was about 19 or 20, you know, and you meet people and say, well, Timmy, how's the sport going? And I was like, oh, no.
You were nearly dreading the questions before they even came.
And are you still in with the county? No, I'm not really. It was really, you know, it was disappointing. I felt like I left people down, left myself down, you know, and that I wasn't able to fulfill my potential. You know, I knew I could have definitely done great things, like, and just didn't happen. So early 20s then, I was kind of getting my head around, look, you're not suddenly this great sports person that you are, you know, and I needed to change things around and find other things, you know. And even now, that's why I like the, I'm still very interested in all sports, you know, and I love playing sports and competing and trying to do things well, you know. And that's why I'm probably now looking at maybe getting involved with teams, with managing and coaching, that I can feed down maybe some of my own experiences of, even this is what you should do and this is what you shouldn't do, through my experiences maybe, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose, look, you were the first kind of hurler of note as well from Tipperary Town to be on any Tipperary team in a long, long time, so there will be burden and pressure in relation to that, like. And I suppose what's really of note there is the fact that you said that, like, you felt not even just pressure on yourself or your family, but nearly the pressure of the town, like. And I know you're not saying that in a negative way.
No, I didn't really think too much into that.
Yeah.
I suppose the one thing when you're a Conor forward, and I always admire the great players in the game, because if you have the best player on the team, is going to be marked by the other team's best player, or is going to get taken, try to be taken out of the game. So you've got fantastic players that are man marked every game, and even they get big scores, and like, these people are just brilliant players, like, you know. And my biggest thing was when I was playing was just to feel I was marking, to try and get one over on him, you know, because I remember great battles down through the years of just, I suppose, playing against teams, and they put maybe their best corner back on me or whatever, and just trying to get over that battle rather than thinking about you have to do this or you have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I always had in my head, I want to score a certain thing, or this is my target for today, or do this and do that, and was never. But see, my problem was I was never happy. You could score 12 points and you'd want to score 13, you know, that kind of way. And it was always
but you nearly thrived and we call it pressure, but you nearly thrived on that kind of expectation. Yeah.
Would you always be a bit negative after a game, a bit down? Because you said you had pressure, like, you never did as much as you do.
I remember I played in the All-Ireland Minor Hurling Final in 2006, and I scored 1-3, but I actually hit, there was two balls that I think they dropped short. And I remember after the game, I was thinking about the two balls, you know, that I dropped short, like, you know. And my father let me know that I dropped them short as well.
It's terrible the way the mindset works, that you focus on those negatives after scoring 1-3. But look, I suppose this is a story that we got to know you a little bit better there, Timmy, and we appreciate your honesty, and, you know, you are an open and honest guy anyway. But I suppose we wanted to move into the thing, that stuff that you wanted to talk about, Timmy, which, and this is about you as much as about us, you know, and I suppose the listeners as well, that they're driving it on. So we're going to talk about the drop-off rates from juvenile to senior, which are, you know, they're quite apparent even in the Rovers. I was chatting to boys about this. You know, I think there's maybe, at the moment over in the Rovers, there's two lads from maybe each minor team over the last 10, 15 years. Do you know? So, there's, I'm the only 89 there, I suppose, and there's only, Jonesy's the only 88. Are you 88 as well?
88.
Yeah, so he's the only 88 left, and there's no one above that, which is fine, you know. But look, I'll stop talking now, and Danny's going to tell us a little bit about why his drop-off story in terms of sport and stuff.
Yeah, so I was really excited about this topic, Timmy. I'm delighted that you're after joining us, and thanks for having us in your house. I suppose my drop-off story would be I came to soccer very late. Soccer was my only sport, so I came to soccer very late. I was 15 when I started playing. So by the time I got to youths, I was after only 3 or 4 years experience of playing game. So when I was playing with St. Michael's, the next level up was the B team and the first team training. And I felt very lost when I went up to that level because I just didn't have the ability or the qualities that these guys had because they'd been playing for so long, you know. So for me, when I was arriving to training, I just felt like I was the ball was coming to me and I was probably breaking down the play a small bit. Now, they gave me chances, like, you know, I played a few games at the B team and stuff. But that's Division 1, and Division 1 is nothing to be joked at either. It's a good level of football, like, you know, the Premier's the next one up, like. So for me, I just stopped going training. And I suppose at the time, there was no real support network there. Burns is going to touch on that again in a while.
Yeah.
But there was no support network there. Nobody really got onto me. I was just kind of left in the wilderness, so I just didn't play anymore. But then Tip Town FC decided that they were going to start a club in 2010, and they were going to start in Division 4. So I felt like maybe that's an opportunity to get back into it. And I did, and I was delighted I did. And I played for 4 or 5 years. We actually ended up going up to the Premier League with Baca, who was on episode 2. So if they hadn't started the club, I may have never played soccer again.
Yeah, kind of 100%. It was an opportunity.
Yeah, but for anyone out there, I suppose it's just if you are going from youths up to senior, there's other clubs around if you don't feel like you're able to make that jump up to the big leagues, like, you know, because I knew I didn't have the quality to play with St. Michael's first team, like, you know.
Yeah. I think that's a great point as well, that you'd be amazed, like, Timmy, you obviously started playing sport when you were very young, maybe under 6, under 8, so in the Rovers, right? And I started a little bit later, maybe under 10s. What time, when did you start playing sport?
Yeah, 8 or 9.
Yeah, so you'd be amazed the body of work, and I don't know the exact sports science behind it, but in terms of, you know, mobility, you know, I suppose agility and all that stuff that you build up as you going up along before you become a teenager even.
They obviously say you can work on it as you go up along, but if you get a child that is 12 and they can't hit off left or right or kick off left or right, it's actually quite hard to...
So starting late can be an issue. So, yeah, I think get your kids into sport as early as possible. There's only good things to come from it because it can maybe almost set you back a bit.
But just to go back to Timmy there. So Timmy, like, we'll say you started off very young playing lots of sports. How did you feel with playing all the different sports? Did you feel like one sport helped you in another sport?
The hindsight is a great thing. I would say you have to concentrate in one sport to be the best at that. People love playing different sports. I love playing different sports. I was probably good at a lot of sports that I took up. So that's why I wanted to play them. Because, you know, at the same time, I got great enjoyment out of playing well and in the different sports and that. But I think if I was to advise anyone that's, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18, whatever, I'd be sent to concentrate in one sport, you know.
Yeah.
Because as the saying goes, a jack of all trades, master of none, you know. And you if you want to master one, you have to concentrate in the one, I think, you know. Now, don't get me wrong, if you don't want to get to an elite level or master a certain sport, then it's great to get a great variety of different sports, you know.
Of course.
But what I would say my younger self, I played soccer and football and hurling, three of them, and I maybe should have concentrated on one, you know, and that just to, I suppose, over time I got injured in it. But I would advise all younger people to concentrate on one sport when you get to 16, 17, 18, you know.
Do you think playing too much sport contributed to your injury or getting the injury, or do you think that's
hard to tell?
Sure, obviously
when you play more, you have more chance of getting injured,
true,
you know.
Yeah.
But back then, you were playing without fear, so you'd play a match and play a soccer match on a Saturday and play a GA match on a Sunday, you know, but really you need to give your body time to recover and stuff like that, you know. So even now there's people playing GA and they're playing rugby matches and they're playing soccer, and it's great that you're involved with all the different clubs, you know, but you're really giving yourself more of a chance to get injured and your body, you know, you need your body needs to recover after playing matches as well, you know. But I think myself, the drop off bit from juvenile to senior, like obviously underage, you've got different age groups, so you've got your 12, 14, 16, 18, what it was before, but then eventually when you get to 21, if you don't make the adult grade, you say to yourself, what grade am I to play in now, you know? And if you in my case, I think even if I wasn't playing well for a team, I would have stayed. I wouldn't have dropped off from any sport because I was just too interested in it.
You know?
But obviously, other people maybe say to themselves, "Well, what have I to gain from playing adult sport, or what can I win, or what can I enjoy?" And now I'd be saying to them, "There's loads of I've friends for life from sport, which is the greatest thing of all, you know."
Of course.
Yeah, I know, and we'll touch back and we have a few more, I suppose, in-depth questions on that for you as well, Tibby. And, Bird, you were going to talk a bit about your drop-off story, why you dropped off from sport.
Yeah, I suppose, look, I would have played with a Hendy junior club and I would have gone off to college and whatnot. And I suppose when you're training twice a week then, when I was down in Cork, like, you know, you couldn't go home or whatever it is. And maybe then when I stepped away, there was nobody really onto me to keep it going, you know. And obviously, look, you have work and you're probably trying to finance your college week and whatever it is, and you're a couple of nights out, and then you step away for 2 weeks and all of a sudden 2 weeks becomes a month, and so why am I going back after a month then of not training or whatever it is, you know? But I think the biggest thing for me was definitely people, nobody maybe getting on to you, maybe not saying, go on, drive it on, or fucking you're going fine, or whatever it is, you know?
No, I think you definitely, you need that person in a club, a personable person that's able to talk to lads, you know, in their late teens and kind of stay on to them and say, come on, come back, and look, even if you can only give us a game every couple of weeks, yeah, or make training, you know, you don't have to be
give
in fully.
Give us one good night.
Yeah, you know, just be involved, like, yeah.
There's a lot of development in a player between 19 and 25, you know, or 24 or 5. Yeah. Like, a player mightn't be necessarily too good when they're 19 or 20, and then they get to 24, 25 and they're just a totally different player, you know.
And
developing, like,
it's hard as well for a manager to even keep up with all the players,
yeah,
and be getting onto every single one of them,
yeah,
as well,
exactly,
like, you know. So there has to be a big network of people there, yeah, that'll,
yeah,
do that,
yeah.
So I want to get my facts right with this, because you kind of touched on it, right? So you get to 20, you get to 21, some players don't, as you said, get developed properly till they're 24 or 5 and can come on leaps and bounds, right?
Yeah.
So in terms of inter-county at the moment, so there's a 20s, right?
Yeah.
There's no, is intermediate gone completely?
Intermediate's gone, yeah.
Right. So if you're a 20s player and you finish at 20, like, what do? Just go into the wilderness? Like,
so I suppose the thing at the moment is, if you're a good 20, you're called into the senior team, right? Now, what seems to be happening at the moment is, you still mightn't break onto the senior team for couple of years, but you have to stay in there, and obviously you're improving while you're in there, you know. But say if you don't make the senior team, you're going back to your club trying to impress in games. But if your senior team, if your club is not a good team, how are you going to impress? Or how if you're not in the shop market, how are you going to impress, you know?
Yeah.
So some people then get lost, as in if you're with a county team and your first team is junior A or junior,
yeah,
B, you're not going to get
not
spotted after that now. So it's you really have to kind of stand out, I suppose, from up to 20s at inter-county level to be seen, you know.
And even if your team is like an intermediate team, you still mightn't get seen, like, you know.
Still mightn't, yeah, yeah. And a person could be a very good player and play junior or intermediate, but you'd always maybe get a person, he's only playing junior or intermediate, he's not up to inter-county standard or whatever. And
yeah, because not every player is the best player on the team. Like, you were the best player on the team when you were 16, like, but not every player is like that.
I think as well, like, with the under 20, if a lad is playing under 20 and he doesn't make that step up, as Timmy says, whereas another lad does, he's going in getting maybe 2 years of S&C, the strength and conditioning,
yeah,
which has become absolutely massive now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you see lads, gone are the days of an 18-year-old going in and playing with tip straight away,
yeah,
nearly,
yeah,
aren't,
yeah,
they?
Yeah. No.
Do you know,
yeah,
it's nearly kind of like the rugby now,
yeah,
where a fella has to be physically developed and,
definitely, yeah,
and able to take the hits and after,
yeah,
take the belts. Like.
Yeah,
no, it's a difficult. And we'll try and get some answers as we go on here, but I'll just quickly go up my drop-off story, and then hopefully we'll get down to some, maybe some suggestions and stuff like that. But for me, stopped playing under after we won the minor county final, whatever, 2008. Stopped playing then for 2 years. Lost a bit of interest because we'd actually won 2 months of finals with the Abbey on the bounce. And we, look, not be funny, but the Rovers, like, we won a lot underage and stuff like that. Like, so I kind of lost a little bit of interest, to be totally honest with you, which is stupid. Then went back in when I was 21 and kind of then actually didn't really feel part of the club when I came back. Felt a little bit lost and then went away into the wilderness for 10 years. But that's kind of my drop-off story. Anyway, short and sweet, but... Like, what do you think, Timmy, like, could be done to keep, like, get more to, what could be done to keep lads involved? I kind of touched with Danny there last week. I was kind of touched on it, this idea of, like, a transitional officer. So often you'd have, like, the chairperson of the juvenile club, the chairperson of the senior club. And often the two clubs can seem very different or very distant from each other. So, like, if you were going into a club there, what are some of the things you might do to keep more people involved? So any ideas or suggestions?
Well, I'd be kind of saying that, like, I put a lot of, most of the responsibility actually to the individual themselves.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you were to ask the person themselves, why did you drop off, it's going to be their reason, you know. Now, obviously the big one, life gets in the way of everything, you know. When you hit 18, 19, obviously you've work, college, travel the world, etc.
Yeah.
Different things. So things like that, obviously, you know, I suppose I always wanted to play a sport, so I didn't want to travel the world because I just wanted to play sports and stay around and stay involved with teams. But other people want to travel the world, they want to work, like people are working in Dublin, people are working in Cork and can't commute back for train, things like that, you know. Girlfriends, wives, you know, these things, like, but if you want to stay on, you'll stay, you know. Now, of course, it's great if you had a person in the club that would ring a person that's gone away a couple of years and say, look, have you any interest in coming back, you know, or that, and that's all it might take for someone to come back, you know. And there is people, I see people in our Rovers, you know, they are going missing for a few years and coming back, you know, and it's great to see them coming back, you know. And I think at times we have to understand, look, a person just might want to take a break for a couple of years and see other things around in life, you know. And sometimes I know as well, I've some regrets about times that I went away places and I came back for training, and when I think about it now, I'm, you're mad, like, what, do you know, I could go away somewhere for a weekend and travel back, rush back the road 3 hours to go train and then go back again or something like that, you know. But other people, I know everyone, different people have different mentalities or whatever, but sometimes we've maybe a massive burden on you have to be, if you're in with the club, you have to be in for the year and you have to be at every training session, and there's people putting them things ahead of their life, you know.
So maybe people felt that, some people think like that it has to be all in. But maybe, it, like you're saying there, it doesn't have to be all in. And maybe some people think, if I'm not all in, I can't be in at all.
Yeah, well, I think, obviously, you want people to put in 100% effort. But it's great. If I was managing a team, like, what I like is, if you give it all for, we'll say, 4 weeks, and then you have a weekend off, and then go away again for 4 weeks and have your weekend off, or... things like that. I think now in the GAC, even, it's a bit crazy at times. Say you could start training in March, you know, February, March, and next thing you could be still going in November, and
it's a long time.
You know,
to keep lads.
Yeah, and people have girlfriends and wives that want to go away for a holiday or go to, oh no, I've a GA match there, or this and that, you know, and. Sometimes we just need to step back a bit and say, look, you know, life doesn't always rotate about what you want to do in sports.
So what you're saying then, Timmy, is if you have your players committed 100% and something comes up at the weekend, there's an occasion on, and a fella might go, oh, well, listen, I'm feeling, he might feel a little bit weird about saying, I'm going to this occasion. So he might go to it, or she might go to it, and then all of a sudden they feel out of the loop.
Yeah,
so are you given the responsibility to go to it, but you're welcome back?
Of course, it depends on, like, if you were playing a championship match the following weekend, you'd be saying, well, now, if you're nothing on for a few weeks, by all means, you can go away. But I suppose if a person does then decide to go to an event, or they have to realise that your place might be taken by someone else because you you went away, you know. There's different scenarios and different things that that lead to, you know. Of course, a manager could say, lads, if you're not all in this now, you'll be gone or whatever. But of course, it's different rules for the best player on the team, you know. The best player on the team could be missing every second training session. He could still start, you know. But unfortunately, that's the way things are, unfortunately, you know.
The other thing is, though, Timmy, I suppose, just in terms of the GAA especially, there is a lack of trust probably with players that if you're training every Tuesday, Friday night, if Johnny can only go on a Friday night, sure, he's doing nothing on the Tuesday night. So there probably does need to be a bit of give and take in that the manager, like yourself, says, right, look, Johnny, we're trusting you now to do your own bit.
Yeah, definitely. On the Tuesday night. Yeah.
But as well, if you have a panel of 25, 26, and there's only 13 coming on, training, the other 13 aren't always going to be doing their own bit. You know, it's a fight, it's a balancing.
Yeah, you have to trust people to do their work, etc. And of course, there's job, managers have to realise as well, there's youngsters getting jobs that the person could be working from 3 o'clock in the day until 10 o'clock at night. Yeah. And you know, what are you meant to do? Is say, oh, I can't take that job because I'm training, you know. And these are the different things that happen when you get to 18, 19, 20, you know.
I think you kind of made a great point there, Timmy, back there, and I just want to highlight it to make sure it was apparent. But fellas will have their own interest, or whoever it is, will have their own reason for dropping off. But you said, you kind of touched on the fact that it's more important that when they come back that they're welcomed back. So if you're dropping off, that's fine. But where the club's responsibility is that if we have a fella who's not played for a few years that comes back, that we're not looking at him like he's two heads walking in the park. That we're being nice. Yeah. We're saying, welcome back, and we're happy to have you back.
That probably is a fear of fellas
it was my fear of going back, 100%, you know.
For 3 or 4 years.
And even when you're with a team and just say you're not at training for you don't show up to training, or you're not at training. It's like the whole team need to know why you're not there.
Yeah.
You know, which shouldn't be really the case either, you know.
As long as the manager or the manager coach or whatever knows. Yeah. Fair enough.
And I think as well, Tim, you mentioned there, you gave up a lot as well, didn't you, playing sport in terms of... Look, I know you got a lot out of sport, but you did give up a lot in terms of summers. And, you know, we've a good friend of ours, to be honest with you, I think, I don't know how many years, we just said, Mike, how many years has Mikey played senior football in Hurling? Non-stop.
Probably playing since he's 17, I suppose.
Every summer?
Yeah.
That's 15 years
or that top nine, yeah.
That is some commitment. Is, you know, and Mikey will say, and Mikey's got a lot out of the club, but there's no, we have to be honest, he's probably missed a bit as well, a few things or sacrificed a few things.
Yeah, I think it needs to be acknowledged every now and again, you know, even if you have a person in the club that's putting in a great effort, it just all it takes is for some person just to go up to them and say, geez, fair play for the effort that you're putting in or the commitment that you're putting in, because people are giving up massive time, to play, you know.
Well, we went and played the Abbey Classic with the Arve Rovers last week with Mikey, and you can see the respect that people have for him around the club. He couldn't go 2 or 3 yards without talking to someone about the club, or with the club. Yeah. Sorry, Fergal.
So I suppose just to say, why have you stayed, Timmy? So we'll flip it on its head. That so like you've we're talking about the drop off rate, but I mean, if we want to understand why people stay, then maybe we need to understand, I suppose, why people stay. Yeah, I guess that's my question. Yeah.
So first of all, you have a great love for your club, and you know, and whatever sport it is, you like to stay attached to that club, you know, and the people in it, and you've great friends. I remember, when I was under 12 all the way up, there was myself, Brian Jones, Paul Ryan. These lads that went up through the ages all together, you know, and even every now and again, I think back of, remember that time we played, and you know, they're just great memories.
Yeah, and you were three good pals, and you were very strong as well under it, and you were lucky that team was, you three of you were great players. Even if, both James Leary was on that team as well, you have a couple of more, but three of you really stood out, to be fair.
And they were great times, you know, then as you get older, then I suppose the club, it goes into your heart, I suppose, and you want to stay involved, because if you don't, you'll say, oh well, if I'm not helping out with this, then who is going to help out, and different things like that. So I just wanted to stay involved with the club. I felt myself that I should be playing until I'm 30 4 or 5 anyhow, so I wanted to stay involved up until that age.
Kind of almost like a sense, you almost felt a sense of duty, like, did you?
Yeah, I felt like I should be there, you know, because if I wasn't playing, I should still be there and give what I can, you know, help out in a certain way, you know. I'm after moving to Nina there recently now, so it's going to be harder to come back in that, you know, but I'm going to still be involved with sports teams, you know, because I just love it, and I believe myself that I might have something to offer, you know, a team, whatever team it is, you know, underage or adult or whatever, just giving little bits of advice, and you know.
Yeah, 100%. I think you're right. I remember last week after the game, we won't talk about the score against commercials. We were selling all the boys from the Rovers. We were inside Leahy's and we went for a beer or whatever, like, after the game, and I kind of said to myself, Jesus, this I know we got badly beaten, but we were having a good laugh and a giggle, and, you know, after, obviously we were depressed for a while, but we were kind of saying, like, I kind of said to myself going away, this is why I came back to the sport, so I could talk and I could chat to fellas, you know, and be involved in the town again, and you feel a part of the town, like, you know, because you're walking down the town and people are asking, well, how'd you go on the weekend or stuff like that, like, you know, it's nice, it's to be fair, like, you know.
You were drinking my waddy, were you?
Oh, yeah, my waddy, yeah, of course. Well, I had the injury, so I was drinking a pint anyway.
But yeah, so
just, well, that brings us on to our next one, doesn't it?
Well, I actually wanted to cover a different topic altogether, because do you know, Timmy? Okay, you're involved with management now, and you say you have a lot to offer the club. But I just like to link it back up with a previous episode with Willie Staunton. You know, so Willie was talking about his management after a game, that sometimes I brought up the topic of maybe looking at the negative sometimes time, like, you know. So Willie was saying that he might pick out 2 or 3 pints of a game and try and work on them throughout the week, and if he needed to pull a fella to the side and say, look, on Saturday, this didn't work for you, or that didn't work for you, whatever. That's what he'd do. That was his policy, a way of doing it. So, Timmy, my question for you is, what way do you deal with man management? If a player is having a good game or a bad game, do you ever pull him to the side, or is that something that you don't do, but you you know, what's your policy on it?
I suppose, when you're on the sideline looking at a match, and someone does something that is either wrong or right, what I find is that it'd stick in my head, and I'd say to myself, right, when the time comes, I have to tell that person, look, what you done there was whether it was right or wrong, you know. But there's certain things, you could have maybe 3 or 4 things that stick in your head watching a match, and you would say it to a person afterwards, you know. Because, and the only reason you're saying it to the person is to help them or help the team. And I suppose man management, then there's a certain way that you have to say it to a person. And I think, you know, you have to say it, maybe, is it, some people, they have to be said in a nice way.
Yeah.
You know, so there's different characters that you can say it in a nice way, and then other people you can say, what did you do that for? And they won't mind, you know. So it's all depends on the person that you're saying it to, you know. But you have to tell them what they did wrong or did right, because that'll improve them as a person going on to the next game or whatever. So, like, I remember myself even when I could picture myself, I was playing for Avrora Seniors, and I wasn't playing as well as I should have been. And I remember a few times I was kicking a cross field pass, you know, across, and if I was 19 or 20, I'd kick it across no problem and find the person. But because my legs were slower and unfit, etc., balls were getting intercepted, you know. And I can still remember Darren Lowry roaring abuse at me about kicking the ball across the field, you know. But I was the type of
person,
but like, some people, I don't mind the person. If someone gave out to me, I'd say, well, do you know what, they're actually right, do you know, they're right. Whereas other people, you could give out to them and they'd walk out the gate,
that's know? It yeah, yeah
so
yeah.
It's different balance, different things, you know.
And just another one there, just on the warm-ups, Timmy. Just look, you've been involved underage with high level, and you know, you're a manager yourself. So what way do you like to structure your warm-up then? Like, is it a quick thing? Is it just a pulse raise? Or are you more of a 45-minute man where you just get the boys out kicking ball?
No, I suppose half an hour. What I'd like to cover is, I suppose, starting off, just get your stretches, get mobile, stretching, so you don't pull a muscle or whatever, you know. Stretching, and then I think it's very important to work on whatever game it is. So if it's hurling, get in your strike on your left, your right, get your touch on the ground, catch overhead, shoot for goals, a bit of tackling, you know, say, cover everything that you might happen in a match.
Yeah.
the same with football, cover everything that, that might happen in a match. So passing, hand passing, left leg, right leg, catching overhead, shooting for goals, tackling. And just cover that in a rough, we'll say, 20, 25 minutes, you know, with your stretches.
So you're not going over complicated.
You're just using everything that you're going to use in the match.
Yeah.
Along with your stretching and just go with that. Of course, it depends then, like, you want the team just right and you don't want to get them, you don't want to tire them out before the game, you know?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Depends on, of course, I know it mightn't happen in Ireland much, but if you had a summer there where, if you had a day where there's a scorch and hot weather, then you bring it down to 10-15 minutes, you know, and try and get everything in that, you know.
Yeah.
All different days, different locations, you know.
Yeah,
I suppose just to add to that, Timmy, would you have seen a massive difference since when you started with county teams and club teams up until now, like in terms of warm ups and that?
Yeah, there's a massive difference. Like, I suppose even when I was playing underage and tip and stuff, like, there wasn't much emphasis on gym work, you know. Now gym is massive, and I totally agree with the gym work at the moment, because you're prepping your body, you know, for this, you know, the inter-county hurling and football at the moment is just borderline professional, you know. They're running at big speeds, big hits, fantastic athletes, like, you know, and the gym is a massive part of that, you know. But when it comes back to, like, as well, like, unfortunately, you still have to put the ball over the bar.
You
have to go back to the basics as well, you know.
I think the gym work, Timmy, in fairness to you, myself and Burns were working in the complex at the time, and you were coming in trying to get your team right, and you were organising circuit classes and maybe spinning classes. You're just trying to do that. But I think what that does then is goes back to your original point. The gym work, I suppose, kind of helps prevent injury as well.
It does, yeah. It gets the body in shape, like, and I suppose when I'm involved with teams, I try, like, to, at the end of the year, I might say, right, did you do everything you possibly could for the team? And if that's organising gym sessions or extra free-taking sessions or goalkeeping sessions or whatever, then I'd be ticking off the box that way, right? You've done this. And then you can say, right, you couldn't have done any more. So you know, you can be happy with yourself, you know. So I think some managers are considered good managers if they win. And I don't think that necessarily should be the case. I think a good manager is someone that can try and get the best out of a team. So if you can try and get the best out of a player or a team, yeah, I think you've done your job.
100%.
Because unfortunately, everyone can't win, and there's only so much you can do with a team. You can't get a team that's down at the bottom and expect to win straight away, you know. But if you can get the best out of them, that's your job done, you know.
That's a really, really good point, because Willie Staunton actually covered on that last week as well, that sometimes developing a player is the medal that you get at the end of the year as well. Like, you know, maybe in 2 or 3 years' time, that player and a group of players then reward your effort for developing them.
Definitely.
Maybe bring that into the overall team.
Yeah,
win
the winning team then.
Yeah.
So yeah, Timmy, a few questions came in then during the week. It was a good few questions, actually. And one of the teams that was kind of came about was the idea that, like, the GAA can sometimes feel a little bit unsocial. So you kind of have, you know, rugby is very social. A lot of rugby clubs have bars and stuff in them and things like that. And, you know, a lot of people said sometimes the GAA can be a little bit strict with regards to, I suppose, drinking bans and things like that. Now, look, a lot of clubs have got rid of their drinking bans, so do you think the GAA isn't as social as it could be? Could it be a little bit more social? Is it a bit, well, where do you stand on drinking bans as a manager, but also as a club kind of thing as well, I guess?
I think the GAA is social. A lot of GAA games, they go out afterwards, so I don't know. What I'd say is,
we're supposed to drinking ban, like, if you were taking a team, would you put a drinking ban in place? Do you agree with them?
Have
you been on drinking bans before?
I wouldn't, but I think, obviously, like, you shouldn't be drinking, ideally, a few weeks before a big game. Like, you shouldn't be drinking, like, you know.
Okay.
Now, of course, like, we've club players, like, you know, if you're, again, it comes back to the, if you think about the best player on the team, if the best player on the team drinks the week before a match, are you going to drop that person? So if the worst player in the team drinks the week before, should they be treated any differently? No, they shouldn't. You know, so if you're bringing in the drinking ban and your best player on the team drinks the week beforehand, that person has to get dropped. Do you know?
You've kind of snookered yourself by bringing
in. So are you prepared to do that?
Yeah.
Are you prepared to do that? That's
the question.
That's what it comes down to, you know. We can't have different rules for different people, you know.
I suppose it goes back to kind of creating that culture, like we were talking to Willie Staunton and Baca about that. It goes back to the best player won't go drinking because he's part of a good enough culture that he says, Joe, I'm not going to leave the boys down.
Yeah, yeah. And the best player and even the captain, I suppose, if they lead by example, the rest of the players will hopefully follow, you know.
So I suppose, just wrapping it up then, and kind of, Timmy, like, going back to the theme of it, you know, drop-off and stuff like that. So there's an 18-year-old lad or girl or whatever, 16 or 17, and they're kind of, they're tipping away, and they're, you know, part of the team, and could be a star, or they could be the worst player on the team. It doesn't, you know, anything in between, but they're probably losing a bit of interest or going to leave the sport. Like, what would be your words of wisdom or your plea to a person of that age that might be listening today if they're going to leave their team or kind of go off into a different thing? What would you say to them?
I'd probably say, when you get to 18 or 19 and you're thinking about maybe dropping off from sport, I'd probably say, well, you know, first of all, of course, what's your reason? But what would you like by staying on? What would you like to get out of it? So are you not staying on because you don't think you're going to win anything? Or are you not staying on because you just couldn't be bothered or whatever? But what I'd always say is, in sports is great for developing yourself as a person. It's great to be involved with teams, you know, meeting people, talking to people. Even you could be over in a training their sport, and afterwards you could just talk to someone in the car park afterwards, you know, and it might be just about life or about work or anything like that. And it's just brilliant to stay involved with teams. Like, so I think anyone that's thinking about dropping out of sports definitely should rethink it, even just to stay involved with a team environment, with people, different walks of life on teams. It's a great place to be in. And even if that person wants to go away to college or travel the world for a few years, you know, definitely come back, because every club, no matter what it is, if it's football, hurling, rugby, soccer, whatever, everyone will welcome you back, you know, and understand that you were traveling or you were working or whatever, you know, and they'll put their hand around you and say, great to see you back, you know.
I think with players as well, Timmy, that are involved in teams, not only is there a social aspect and, of course, the playing sports aspect, but sometimes there's actually career aspects in it as well. So sometimes a player that you might have, he might be a boss of some business or whatever, and he sees that maybe you're just after recently finishing college, or you're looking for a job, and there's an opportunity there for you because he knows who you are, he knows what you can do. Definitely. You know, you've great, you know.
I remember a few times definitely that, say, different jobs have come up and a person had thrown up in the WhatsApp group. Yeah. No, so you've a team WhatsApp group, and suddenly putting up, lads, look, there's a job going there in town for any that'd like it, whatever. And thanks very much, you know, or whatever. And different things like that. It doesn't have to be all talk about sports, you know.
I think you're right. I think you have to be a team on the field and a team off the field. And really at the heart of it, you're a group of people coming together to enjoy something together, and you should be a support network for each other. And you should be there for each other when you're winning county finals, but also, and we'll probably touch on that in the off season, you know, if you notice a fella's feeling a bit down at the moment, asking for, I know we're getting onto different thing, but asking, do you want to go for a walk or just be a support network anyway? It's kind of what we're going with.
Now, of course, it comes down to it at the start of the year. If you're a manager team, of course, you have to say, right, lads, what can we achieve this year? And it is about winning. So at the start of the year, you say, what realistically or what do we want to achieve? And then if we don't achieve that, then you have to talk about why we didn't achieve it. So now, of course, when you're entering a competition, your aim is to win. So we can't just say, oh, well, my aim is to be great to meet a lot of friends here. Like, you know, but I suppose winning is the target. And then those other things then are great behind it all, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
I suppose a winning team will be a team that are pals with each other. I've yet to see a winning team that didn't get on with each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, but yeah, Dan, do you want to wrap it up there and tell the folks what they need to do, or did you have another question?
I have another question.
Oh,
Timmy, you had a lot of people wrote in, right, and some very serious questions, but a few messages wrote in as well. Now, you had a few teammates from regional and stuff like that get in contact with us, but look, a very, very random question. It's totally off topic, but I just thought it was funny. But this is the question, right? You're on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You're stuck on a question. The only lifeline you have left is phone a friend. Who are you phoning? And why?
You didn't tell me what the question
was. I don't even know what the question is. That is the question. Who are you phoning if you're stuck on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yeah, it's not as give it three or four people.
It's not a sport. Well, yeah, you give it to Carrie. If you're asking for a sports question, who'd be your man? If it's a general knowledge, who'd be the person? If it was a history or geography one, who'd be the person, I guess?
Sports question.
Yeah.
I suppose if it was a sports question, probably been Baca. I suppose it was sports.
Very good.
Just because of his knowledge of everything.
would you ring back?
See, the problem with ringing him is even if he didn't know, he'd tell you the answer. So
might not be right.
Yeah, but I suppose if it was just a random question, I suppose I better say I ring my wife.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good answer.
I have
to
give Emma a mention. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
Emma's speed dial number one. Yeah, it's gonna be her. Yeah.
100%, that's great, Timmy. Thanks very much for that. But look, listen, it's been absolutely fantastic speaking to you today. You know, it's been great to get an honesty out here, hear a bit about your own experience, and also to hear about what you felt about the drop-off rates and stuff like that. Look, the reason I asked you is that I suppose it wasn't the success story that you felt it would be, but you, as you touched on, you found your way. Now you're into coaching, so... Where to next for you? What's next on the agenda? Like, where do you see yourself in terms of sport in a few years' time?
I suppose I'd like to get involved with managing teams, you know, and try and get the most out of myself that I can, you know, and as I said, through my own experiences, I'd be hoping that I can pass on info to people, you know, to help them out. So I suppose that's what I'm looking at down the line, you know, getting involved with teams and try and benefit those teams, you know. That's I'm interested in sports, so obviously that's the lines I want to go on.
Would it have to be your home club, or would you look further afield?
I don't mind anything. I suppose it's variety is great too. Different teams and of course I'm living in Nenagh now at the moment, so I suppose the handiest thing is around Nenagh. But I definitely will come back and get involved with teams in Arbh Rovers, because Arbh Rovers has been great to me. You know, I started under seven, so I'm not just gonna just go away now, you know. I'm gonna come back and help with different things, you know. So even the boys are playing today, and I'll go over and watch that, you know, and it's just great to still be involved with the club, you know.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, so Timmy, thanks very much. I have to admire your honesty on the topic, and I'm sure people will definitely pull widgets of information out of that, and hopefully even if one person decides that they're gonna drop out of sport, doesn't now because of this podcast, it'd be a great success. Again, it goes back to maybe not always winning medals, but just getting fellas, you know, involved or whatever. But just to finish it up, I suppose, thanks everyone for getting in touch for Timmy Dalton's episode, episode 4. We're on a good stretch of it at the moment, and we have a few more guests lined up. So please keep resharing, and if you're really enjoying it, leave us a review and a comment on our podcast. Deck, do you want to finish it off with any final words?
Yeah, no, just again to thank Timmy, I suppose, who would be a friend of all of ours, the three boys here, and it was nice to talk to him. Kind of, maybe you wouldn't have spoken to him like this before, you know, I was kind of messing or whatever it is, so see, it's good to get that little bit of information off him.
Right, good stuff, listeners, take care, and we'll chat to you soon.
Bye-bye.